Ladies and gentlemen, a very good morning to all of you. Nice to see all of you back again at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, the Institute for Contemporary Affairs. I recognize about 99.6% of everybody in the room, but nonetheless, just in the name of protocol, I'm Dan Diker, the Deputy Director of the Institute for Temporary Affairs, and I have the great honor of introducing to you a person who is widely recognized in the Israeli political and military echelons, national security echelons, as one of the leading strategic thinkers in the country. Dr. Yuval Steinitz was the head of the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee of the Parliament until recently, until this last elections. He is widely recognized, and because I do analysis in the Knesset, I hear these firsthand. As you know, Israelis don't agree about what time to have a coffee break in this country, but there is one major point of agreement in the Knesset, and that is that Dr. Steinitz's term as chairman of the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee brought us an unprecedented level of strategic thinking and reevaluation, and even very constructive, very tough criticism about Israel's national security and defense doctrines. Dr. Steinitz chaired the Intelligence Committee of following the Iraq War on Israel's intelligence failures. He also, as you may know, was behind the 2004 letter that was just publicized at the Herzliya conference about two weeks ago, in which Dr. Steinitz penned a far-reaching letter to then Defense Minister Mofaz, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon at the time, saying that if Israel did not consider a wide-ranging ground operation in the event that events in Lebanon continued, it would not prevail from the air. Dr. Steinitz's letter 2 years ago, 2 years later, we know what the results on the ground were, and therefore his letter was very much ahead of the curve, unfortunately for all of us. He today also chairs the Parliamentary Knesset Joint Committee that is co-chaired by Dr. Steinitz, as well as Arizona Senator John Kyle, and that continues today, even though Dr. Steinitz is in the opposition Likud party and not in the coalition. Dr. Steinitz is going to talk today about Israel's Gaza dilemma. Israel's Gaza dilemma. Will Israel be forced to undertake a major military operation in Gaza following Israel's war with Hezbollah in Lebanon? We all know that there are some alarming developments in the north. The developments over Israel's southern border with Gaza are no less alarming. So it is very timely this morning that we can hear from a person who really has dealt with these issues intensively over the last number of years. We shall learn very much from Dr. Steinitz this morning. Dr. Steinitz.
Good morning. Thank you, Dan, for the warm introduction. Let me start by two preliminary remarks. First, I want to mention that I supported the unilateral disengagement from Gaza, the Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, although I think today that we could do it in much better ways, that we did several mistakes around the disengagement. I thought then, and I'm still thinking, that it's better to Israel, from strategic point of view, not to be in Gaza and not to have Israeli settlements inside Gaza. And I didn't change my mind, despite the very difficult results and the very difficult situation around Gaza following the disengagement. The second remark that I want to do with regard to Lebanon, because I'm going to connect the two issues, is, and let me be very clear and bold about it, that in a sense we lost the war in Lebanon. From purely a military point of view, we won the war. We caused our enemies much more casualties than they caused us, much more damage to their military infrastructure, to their headquarters than they caused us. This is from purely a military point of view. Still, we lost an opportunity to eradicate this Iranian arm that is threatening the north of Israel. And for us not to have decisive victory over the Hezbollah, especially after they shoot so many rockets deep into Israel, this means to lose the war, because everybody would expect us that once they shoot not just on the border zone, but deep into Haifa and deep into Israel for more than a few days, this will be the end of their military presence in Lebanon. And since this didn't occur, people consider this as a Israeli failure, and rightly so. So in a sense, we failed twice. First, we failed for 1 month to defend our people. 2 million Israelis were in underground shelters, and it took us, well, it didn't. Yes, it took us several weeks to fail, and we still we end the war without this achievement. Rockets were falling in Haifa and Krayot until the last day of the war. So technically we failed to give our people a proper defense in the north. And secondly, and it's the two sides of the same coin, we fail to put an end to this threat, which is actually an Iranian arm that threatening us in the north. Dan mentioned the letter that we wrote to Prime Minister Sharon and Defense Minister Shaul Mofaz in February 2004, I and my colleagues in the Defense and Foreign Affairs Committee, and really in 2004, in the beginning of 2004, we already realized that the IDF and the defense establishment are wrong, that they don't understand the real essence of the Hezbollah threat and how to deal with it, and that they put too heavy reliance on the Air Force. They thought that it can be dealt with the air power alone. And after examining this issue in 2003, we came to the conclusion that the IDF and the Minister of Defense, then Minister of Defense Shaul Mofaz, are totally wrong about it, and that we have no chance, despite our excellent air capabilities, to gain such control of Lebanon from the air that will enable us to give proper defense to our people only through air campaign. Unfortunately, they were not convinced by the Defense and Foreign Affairs Committee. Now they are convinced that we were right, but it's too late. There are several conclusions to be drawn from Lebanon with regard to Gaza, and now I'll be shifting from Lebanon to Gaza. The most obvious one is that Chekhov was right, that if you see the gun on the table in the first scene of the play, it is highly probable that it will shoot in the last scene. Because this is what happened in Lebanon. We saw the guns or the rockets coming from Syria and Iran to South Lebanon. Much more rockets, heavier rockets, longer ranges rockets. Month after month, for 6 years since we completed our withdrawal from Lebanon. And some of us delude themselves, we were deluding ourselves, that they will never dare to shoot as far as to Haifa, that this is not very probable that they will shoot rockets, not just on Kiryat Shmona, as they did in the past, on the border zone, but deep into Haifa or maybe to Tel Aviv. We saw the rockets, but our former chief of staff, Bugi Yaalon, by the way, I think that generally speaking, was a good chief of staff, even a very good one, but he said that he was asked about the rockets, the thousands of rockets in Lebanon, say they will stay there until there will be erosion, will destroy them. If you see your adversaries, some terrorist organizations gathering rockets and conducting massive force building, at first scene, you should expect them to use it at second or third scene. This is the first conclusion that we can draw from Lebanon to Gaza. And the second, which is very similar, not just about rockets, what we see in Gaza, now I'll start from purely a defense or security point of view, despite all the differences, is very, very similar to what we saw in Lebanon. What happened in Lebanon that after the unilateral, it was also unilateral Israeli withdrawal from South Lebanon 6 years ago, we saw the Hezbollah conducting with massive help from Iran, massive force building for 6 years. And exactly the same is now occurring in Gaza. We withdrew from Gaza 1 year ago. We uproot all the Israeli settlements and all the Israeli presence in Gaza. And since then, the Hamas force building, mainly the Hamas, but also other terrorist organizations, is rising, is accelerating. If before they would accept approximately 3,000-4,000 guns annually from Egypt, through Egypt, since the Israeli withdrawal, they are getting between 15,000 and 20,000 guns annually through Egypt, through the Sinai Peninsula into Gaza. If before they couldn't smuggle longer-range anti-tank rockets, but only short-range RPG rockets, now they are smuggling already much longer-range and more modern anti-tank rockets. If before there were no anti-aircraft missiles in Gaza, now they already possess anti-aircraft missiles. And what is even more significant, in the last year, since our withdrawal from Gaza, all organizations, but mainly the Hamas, were able to draft dozens of thousands of young people and to train them, to train them as terrorists, as fighters, and even to send dozens of their commanders through Egypt to Iran, to Syria, and to Lebanon to be exercised and to go back to Gaza in order to educate and to exercise other people, to be teachers of other people. So what we see in Gaza is something that reminds us the occurrences in Lebanon. Massive and accelerated force building following the Israeli withdrawal. Much more Iranian presence and Iranian aid following the Israeli withdrawal. Before, the Iranian aid was one level. After the Israeli withdrawal, much stronger. So if to conclude this, today Hamas, mainly Hamas, but also other organizations in Gaza, are engaged in massive force building. We are disturbed by the rockets, but also by other means and exercises they are doing there. And they already use their new capacities vis-a-vis the PLO, vis-a-vis the Fatah. In the last fighting, Hamas showed that they have capacities not less than the Palestinian Authority forces and the Palestinian police or other official forces. Let me conclude this point, because there are a lot of disagreement in Israel about how to deal with Gaza, but there is general agreement, at least in the security establishment, about the situation. The diagnosis is clear, the prognosis is less. The diagnosis is the following. And now in speaking, Dan didn't mention that. I'm still the chairman of the subcommittee on defense readiness and combating terrorism. So I'm still dealing with those issues. It is generally agreed that if nothing will happen, that if there will be no dramatic shift or development, a year from now, Hamas and other organizations will be able to shoot rockets, not just on Shderot and Ashkelon, as they are doing today, but as far as to Ashdod, and maybe also Be'er Sheva, the Chatzerim air base, and some other strategical sites. Some are saying it will take approximately a year, some are saying it might take shorter, some are saying it might take between a year and 2 years, but it is clear that this is forthcoming, that if Israel will avoid any operation in Gaza, in a year or two, missiles will be fired, or they will have the capacity to fire missiles as far as Ashdod, and maybe, this is less clear, as far as Be'er Sheva. In 3 to 4 years, they will be able to develop rockets that will put direct threat from Gaza to the Tel Aviv area, to the Dan block. Of course, it might be shorter if they will receive such huge rockets through the border, but since this is very difficult to smuggle, and even the Egyptians will find it difficult to ignore such huge rockets, the smuggling of really huge rockets, as Hezbollah were receiving in Lebanon, it's quite reasonable that they will have to develop it themselves, as they are doing with the Qassam rockets. And this is estimated that it will take them 3 to 4 years to develop rockets that will reach not just Ashdod, but maybe also the Tel Aviv region. To conclude, it is obvious, and there is no differences here between the IDF and the Shin Bet and the security services, that if this kind of force building in Gaza will proceed for several years, we are going to face very similar threat, rocket threats, missile threats, from the south to that we just faced last summer from the north. Therefore, there is also general agreement that we sooner or later we should do something in Gaza in order to stop this kind of force building and to prevent such a threat that today it's a regular terrorist threat on the people of Shderot and Ashkelon and all the kibbutzim around, but if they will reach the range of Ashdod and maybe Be'er Sheva, not to speak about Tel Aviv, it might become a strategic threat to the state of Israel, including a threat to many important military and strategic compounds. What to do? This is another question. What is the prognosis? Here there are differences. My view for more than 2 years now is that we have only one solution. And now in speaking from military point of view, I shall shift soon to the political issue. But in my view, and this is also to do with the war in Lebanon, we have only two alternatives. One is to try to stop this process or to jeopardize it through air force, through air power, and sometimes to send commando units to make operations here and there, as we did in Lebanon, and as we actually did in Gaza for the last year. this is one strategy. The other strategy is not to copy what we did last summer in Lebanon, but to copy what we did 3 years ago in Judea and Samaria, in the West Bank, Defense Shield 2, and this is completely a different military approach, not to try to strike from the air and to send spatial forces here and there, but the approach of Defense Shield operation conducted by the Sharon government in 2003, was we are recapturing the Palestinian territories for several weeks in order to gather intelligence, to arrest people, to investigate people, to kill or arrest most terrorist leaders, and to deliver heavy blow to the terrorist networks. I think that it's already clear to you what is my view. The only chance to stop this process of force building by the Hamas and other organizations in Gaza is to go back to the tactic or to the strategy of Defense Shield 1 and not to the failing strategy of the war in Lebanon last summer. The only chance is to recapture Gaza, and it's not going to be easy. It is going to be complicated from a military point of view. But sooner or later, Israel will have no choice but to recapture Gaza for several weeks, as we did with Nablus and Ramallah and Jenin and Tulkarem and Hebron 3 years ago, not to reoccupy Gaza, not to settle there, but to recapture Gaza for several weeks, to gather intelligence, to go from place to place, from terrorist to terrorist, from rockets factory to rockets factory or hiding place, and to deliver heavy blow to the terrorist networks. This will not enable, this will not finish terrorism from Gaza. This will not finish Hamas or other organizations. As they still exist in Nablus or in Ramallah, they will still exist in Gaza after those, after few weeks of such operation. But the only reason that there is no rocket industry and rocket threats from Judea and Samaria is Defense Shield 1. In Defense Shield 1, the blow to the terrorist networks, to the infrastructure, was so strong, so heavy, that until today, 3 years later, Hamas and Fatah, although they are able to send some suicide bombers and to establish some cells here and there in Judea and Samaria, they don't have the infrastructure, the network, that enable them to produce rockets. If you like to produce rockets, to make tests, to make experiments, you need to produce different parts of the rockets. It's not that simple. In Gaza, they can do it. In Judea and Samaria, the infrastructures are not elaborate enough. And therefore, this is the only reason that there are no serious rocket threats yet from Judea and Samaria. So such an operation will not put a clear end to terrorism from Gaza and to our problems vis-a-vis Gaza, but we are able to cut the force building process of the terrorist capacities in Gaza and to deliver very heavy blow to the terrorist organizations and to their networks inside Gaza. Other things will not do. I thought personally that we had to do such a conclusive operation in Gaza already before the disengagement, preliminary to the disengagement, to deliver heavy blow to the Hamas and other terrorist networks and then to disengage. Yes. But it's clear to me, and I think it is today clearer than ever also throughout our defense establishment that such an operation is forthcoming unless we shall see a dramatic shift in the Palestinian attitude, in the behavior of the Palestinian Authority, but nobody predict such a dramatic shift. I want to move shortly to the political issue, because although it's clear what is forthcoming from military point of view, or what kind of threat will be produced from Gaza if we shall sit and do nothing, as we did until now. Until now, we didn't try to harm the terrorist networks or the rockets industry. We were trying sometimes to shoot on the shooters, yes, to try to prevent the shooting of rockets, to try to intercept those who were going to shoot, but not, we did nothing to harm the entire infrastructure. Just few words about policy in the light of the Palestinian summit in Mecca. The real essence of the meeting of Mecca and what we saw last year is clear, and I'm afraid very negative. What we really see last year is not that the fundamentalists, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, are accepting the authority of the moderates, of the Fatah. Well, the Fatah are not the moderates, but so-called, but vice versa. What we really see in Mecca today, the real essence of such a meeting that half a year ago it was unthinkable. Half a year ago, Abu Mazen would not meet with Mashal, and surely not as equal. Yes. The real essence of the meeting in Mecca is that the Islamists are completing their control of the Palestinian arena. 1 year ago, they took power. They gained power in the Palestinian Authority in the last elections, in the last Palestinian elections. And they had the majority in the parliament, and also they erected the government. And now they are going to join the PLO, which means actually that although Abu Mazen will continue to serve as the president of the PLO, the PLO will be dominated by the Hamas and will be unable to move without the consent of the Hamas. Since the Hamas is in close alliance with Iran, and Hania made it very clear during his last visit to Tehran that we have a strategic alliance with the Iranian regime, this means actually that the Palestinian Authority is moving from the circle of the so-called moderate or pro-Western Arab states closer and closer to Iran, and this is the essence of the process. So we shouldn't delude ourselves. What we really see is a Palestinian Authority that refused to recognize Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state, that actually violate the initial Oslo agreement that was based on mutual recognition of two states for two people. It was clear that this is the logic of Oslo, two states for two people, an Arab Palestinian state for the Palestinian people, Israel as a Jewish state for the Jewish people, two states for two people. This is not recognized anymore by the Palestinian government. And if Hamas is now having such an agreement, unless we shall be surprised, but it seems that the agreement actually means that even the PLO is now retreating its initial agreement or recognition of Israel. There will be some vague formulation that they respect former agreements that was signed by former Palestinian leaders, but this is less than clear recognition of two-state solution for two people, of two states for two people, or which means clear recognition of Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state. This is, of course, entirely unacceptable from Israeli point of view and also from the Quartet point of view. So the question is now, will be immediately after this summit, either to continue to cheat and to delude ourselves and to say, okay, we can find some positive things, let's speak with them, maybe we can change it a little bit, or to face reality. And I think, and now I'm coming to the last point before we shall open the discussion, I think that it is high time for us Israelis to face reality. Although it is very sad reality. And for me, it is even more frustrating because I'm not just a member of Knesset from the Likud, but I was during the 80s and the beginning of the 90s, a Peace Now activist. And I really believed that if we should make clear enough and deep enough concessions, we will be able to promote peaceful coexistence with the Palestinians. And I think that now, 13 years after Oslo, it is high time to tell ourselves the truth. And the truth is that there is no Palestinian partner. The Palestinian government is not a partner. This is recognized by the international community as well. Some in the international community claim that maybe they can change them. Yes, maybe it can be changed. Maybe they can convince them to become partners. But the current Palestinian government is not a partner, and if Hania will be the next prime minister, how can it become a partner? But the real truth is, and the sad one, that Abu Mazen is not a reliable partner. He is president now for 2 years. He promised to the international community, less than to his people, but also to a certain extent to his people. 2 years ago, one flag, one gun, if you remember his main slogan of 2 years ago, which means there will be one Palestinian Authority with one police or security forces. There will be no militias, no terrorist organizations. He did nothing to achieve this goal. And the results are speaking for themselves, including the fighting and riots in Gaza. There is no one Palestinian gun or security forces, but many officials, also officials by the Hamas, and non-officials. And in a sense, and this is, I said, this is very sad reality, there is no much difference from factual point of view between him and Arafat. It took us Israelis many years to admit to ourselves that Arafat, the man that signed peace treaty with us, the Oslo peace treaty, is not a partner, and that he is actually, and that his regime is a terrorist supporting regime. I think that we shouldn't wait another 10 years to admit to ourselves that it's exactly the same with Abu Mazen. And I don't mind if this is so because Abu Mazen is unwilling or simply because he is incapable. From Israeli point of view, it makes no difference. If he is unwilling or totally incapable, then he is not a reliable partner for peace. Therefore, and here I am speaking not on behalf of the government and not even on behalf of Likud, this is my private view. I think that we have to change our overall approach vis-a-vis the Palestinian Authority. That now, 13 or 14 years after Oslo, we have to say to ourselves, enough is enough. We are ready to make dramatic concessions. I, as a former peace activist, was ready to make very dramatic concessions for peace, not for war and hatred and incitement. This experiment is over vis-a-vis the current Palestinian Authority. And since we don't want to close the door to any future hope, my suggestion is that we shall, and this is to do with Gaza as well, that we shall adopt different approach to Gaza and Judea and Samaria. That Israel will declare, especially if we shall see another government that do not clearly recognize Israel right to exist as a Jewish state, that Israel will declare that for the time being we are abolishing the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. We don't recognize anymore the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. And from our perspective, the Palestinian Authority is now limited to Gaza. In Gaza, they can have the interim state, Palestinian state, for a few years. And we will have a new test, a new experiment, only vis-a-vis Gaza. If in few years' time, we shall see that this limited little Palestinian state in Gaza, but without any Israeli presence, any direct occupation inside Gaza, if we shall see in, let's say, 4 years, that the general direction is peaceful coexistence, that we see less and less terrorism, less and less incitement, less and less violation of the arms control elements of Oslo inside Gaza, then in 4 years, we will resume negotiation also over Judea and Samaria, over the West Bank. If we shall see that this test if the results are not in the positive, then of course we cannot resume anything. To put a long story short, we have to change direction and to make another test. Only if Israelis will see, let's say only around Gaza, okay, in the West Bank things are unclear, there is no final agreement yet, but vis-a-vis Gaza, if we will be provided finally a positive test or a test with positive results, then we can proceed, and the onus will be on the Palestinian Authority to show that at least in Gaza and around Gaza, after the total Israeli pullback, they are able to produce or at least to approach, at least to promote peaceful coexistence. In the West Bank, meanwhile, we can leave all the Palestinian cities with strong municipal autonomy to transform them from areas A to areas B, because we don't want to recapture the main Palestinian population centers, but to make this clear cut after 13 years of total failure. And let's face it, it is a total failure so far, the Oslo process. And I'm speaking as one who supported it at the beginning, who for many, many years during the 80s participated in many, many demonstrations and rallies to encourage Israeli governments to try this track vis-a-vis the PLO, vis-a-vis Arafat. But as a former philosopher, this is my occupation. I dealt a lot with philosophy and philosophy of science. I cannot ignore the facts. And the facts, although very sad facts, that for 13 years, instead of promoting peaceful coexistence, our concessions led once and again to more bloodshed, to more terrorism, to more casualties, by the way, to more suffering on both sides. This happened in Lebanon after our withdrawal from Lebanon. This is happening now after our total withdrawal from Gaza a year ago. And this is happening in the West Bank after partial but very significant Israeli concessions already done in the 90s. I would like now to open it to questions and remarks on any subject. Please, Dan.
Yeah, now it's on. You have drawn a very persuasive parallel between the defensive shield in 2003 and what you think should be done in Gaza. And I recognize some of the similarities, but I would like to point out at least two important differences that I can see. And I would like you to react to that. First of all, the defensive shield came after several years of a terrorist offensive from the terrorist organizations and could only be justified as a response to that. In Gaza, this is not quite yet the case. What are you suggesting that Israel takes a preventive offensive against Gaza to, or are you suggesting that it waits until it is attacked from Gaza in a way comparable to the attack before defensive shield? And the other difference that I can see is Israel is able to seal off the West Bank for all practical purposes. In Gaza, the situation today is different. There is a border with Egypt that Israel is not in control of. And it would make it relatively easy to repair the infrastructure that you want to damage if the border is not under Israeli control. What are you proposing to do about that?
Thank you. I first about the defense shield. Of course, we can wait. The only reason that we are not suffering many casualties from Gaza is that they are not successful enough. They were trying several times to send suicide bombers into Israel. 95% were intercepted. Just 2 weeks ago, we failed to intercept one who detonated himself in Eilat and killed three Israeli civilians. But if the Shin Bet and the IDF would be less successful, we would suffer by now many dozens of casualties. And it's always a question, you know, this is impossible dilemma to the decision makers. Should we wait for a disaster? And then the world will justify our countermeasures? Or should we prevent such a disaster from the beginning? Personally, I think that it's almost immoral to wait for terrible disaster that will come from Gaza to another suicide bomber or another Qassam rockets that will hit a bus with children. Yes, in Shderot, with school or little children with 20 casualties, and suddenly it will be clear that even in the international community that Israel should defend itself. I think that we should not wait, but this is a dilemma. It is almost immoral to realize that such a disaster is forthcoming. It's just a matter of statistic. Yes, until they shoot last year 1,600 Qassam rockets. Luckily enough, we had only few casualties. But one rocket that would hit a children garden or a school bus might cause 30 casualties. And then exactly like the operation, the suicide bombing in Netanya, 3 years ago, it will be clear that now we have to destroy the terrorist organization and their infrastructure in Gaza. I think that, you know, it's almost an impossible dilemma, but, you know, something is, you are right, of course, yes, I don't dispute your question, but something is said in it, because you said, it seems that we don't have enough justification. I blame ourselves. If 1,600 rockets shoot over the border, over the international border, into Israel, are not enough to justify very strong countermeasures by Israel. This is our responsibility. Because I believe that no other country would find itself in similar situations, that usually it should be clear, and it is clear, that if somebody will shoot 1,600 rockets, even short-range rockets, on the Czech Republic, or on Britain, or on France, there will be terrible outrage, and any kind of operation will be almost justified in order to stop this and to prevent it. And to defend the people of Shderot or similar towns in Europe. So if we came to the situation that we restrained ourselves to such a level that people are already, and I agree with you, this is the situation, people are always saying, but you have only few casualties. But most of the rockets didn't hit essential targets, but most of the suicide bombers were intercepted. Only this in a lot escape the border patrol. So you are not justified to preempt. This is very sad. And I blame ourselves. We restrain ourselves too long, too much. So the world is expecting us to further restrain. And I think it's totally unjustified. What was the other fragment of your question? Ah, yes, here you are right again. In the West Bank, there are two factors. One is that we made a defense shield operation, and we didn't make such an operation, parallel operation in Gaza. And this is still very effective because we maintained it. I mean, now it's easier for us to arrest or to look for any terrorist laboratory or factory or attempt to produce rockets and to intercept it in the West Bank, unlike in Gaza. In Gaza, they can defend their infrastructure better because there was no such an operation. And the other factor, which is less significant but also significant, is the border. We have two states here that we made peace with, Egypt and Jordan. Jordan is preventing any military assistance from Iran or from Syria or from Hezbollah to cross its borders, to go through Jordan into the West Bank. As any reasonable and responsible state would do, and Egypt is doing almost nothing to prevent the smuggling of very large and significant quantities of arms and explosives from Iran, sometimes directly from Iran, sometimes from Iran through Syria or through Sudan to the border zone and into Gaza. And by the way, as I mentioned before, Egypt is not preventing also sending people from Gaza to be exercised in Hezbollah camps in Lebanon or in Iran and to be sent back to the to Gaza through Egypt. And this is very sad, but this is a reality. There is much difference between the real attitude of those two countries. One is cooperating with the war, the general war, and also the local war against terrorism, and one is ignoring and actually enabling terrorists to move through its territory. Still, rockets are very difficult to be smuggled. And therefore, although most weapons in Gaza were smuggled, guns, ammunition, very short-range anti-tank rockets, RPG rockets, explosive were smuggled through Egypt, rockets are too big. And even the Egyptians don't like to see trucks with rockets coming through Egypt to Gaza, because it will be very clear that they permit it. And therefore, if we succeed to destroy the rocket industry and its technical support, research and development support in Gaza, it will be very difficult to resume the threat. So with regard to rockets, especially longer range rockets, it is still very difficult to smuggle them. Therefore, they produce them in Gaza, and therefore we are capable of preventing this process.
Pinchas Inbari, JCPA. I would like to ask you about problems that I can find in a major military operation inside Gaza. This may create the collapse of the PA in Gaza, and Israel will be remained the only power that have responsibility on Gaza according to international law. So it means you enter into Gaza in such an operation, you must stay there and take care for the population. And I think that the people now sitting in Mecca, Fatah and Hamas, are aware of this, and that's why they are now talking about reforming the PLO as an alternative to take place of the PA once Israel will cause the final collapse of the PA in Gaza. So maybe another strategy must be thought about, like buffer zones or things like this, something short of entering into Gaza itself.
Okay, thank you for the question. It's a very interesting question, because I didn't think about your second remark, which is interesting. You are suggesting that it might be the case that they are now about to strengthen the PLO because they predict that sooner or later Israel will be forced to dismantle the Palestinian Authority, and therefore, like before the times of Oslo, at least they will have the PLO instead as representative of the Palestinian Authority, because they understand that this cannot proceed like as it is. This is, I never thought about it. It's very interesting thing to try to find out. But to the first part of your question, I think we can avoid it. As we avoided such a similarity, such a situation in the West Bank, what we did in Ramallah, we captured Ramallah and Nablus for a few weeks during Defense Shield 1. We made many searches. We arrested terrorist leaders. We questioned them. They led us to other hiding places and laboratories of explosives and things like that. And we pulled out. And we didn't, not always, we harmed the Palestinian Authority. In many places, we called Palestinian policemen to stay at home, not to be hurt. We were not looking for regular Palestinian officials. And when we pulled out, they came out from their homes with their weapons, and the Palestinian police is still existing in Nablus or in Ramallah. So it is not necessarily that an Israeli operation in Gaza for a few weeks should resulted in destroying the Palestinian police forces, for example. This is not necessarily our Palestinian education system. No, we can do it without, if it will be short enough. Don't forget that now the two Palestinian factions are fighting with each other. So it might be the case that in case of Israeli operation, we will be able to strike terrorists and not the Palestinian police itself. And then when we are pulling out, exactly like in Ramallah, you shall still have the structure of the Palestinian Authority in Gaza. As I said, in the West Bank, I think that we have to change and to dismantle the Palestinian Authority for the time being in the West Bank, to abolish the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank after 13 years of such total failure. And to tell the world the truth, we could take some risk in Gaza even without reliable partner, although it's very grave risks that we are unable to take in the West Bank, in the country center, without reliable partner. We can, Qassams on Shderot are bad enough, Qassams on Tel Aviv and the Ben-Gurion Airport are disaster for the entire country. So we can separate, and we can separate also inside Gaza. if they are interested in such a separation. In any case, I think that Israel is not responsible. We pulled out from Gaza. We have no presence in Gaza. And like any normal state, if they're shooting rockets from Gaza and preparing the next generation of rockets, it is our right and maybe our duty to do something against it, to go into Gaza, to destroy it, and not necessarily to do what the Americans are doing in Iraq, to go into Gaza, to destroy the regime or the terrorist and to stay there. No, we can pull out and let them manage themselves. It is healthier for us and for them as well.
Perhaps I'll ask a question from the floor. Dr. Steinitz, I'm trying to reconcile a dissonance between your defense analysis and your political policy analysis going forward. On the one hand, we understand that the success of Defensive Shield 1 and its continuing success was not only because of the pointed operation in Jenin and Nablus and some of the other population centers, but the continuing presence and ability, freedom of action of the Israel Defense Forces at will in any of those areas at any time they want, because the West Bank was not declared a quasi-government in any formal legal or quasi-legal process. In Gaza, there is a completely different situation because Israel has announced formally to the international community that there is a quasi-government. It has created a de facto international border, not a de jure international border, but a de facto border. And yet the major insoluble apparent problem is coming from Gaza on the military level. But on policy, you said that you would suggest going forward that Israel announce a limited Palestinian state formally in Gaza only, when in fact it appears that the only reason that there might be security for Israel going forward, according to the West Bank model, is if the IDF had freedom of movement at any time in and out of Gaza that it chose. So it appears to that we have a very serious dissonance between the strategic and legal ramifications of a military need to go in and out of Gaza based on the military success of the West Bank Defensive Shield 1 model. How do you reconcile those two problems?
Okay, first, I don't think that there is an essential difference, the jure difference between Nablus as it was before Defense Shield 1 and Gaza. Both of them were territories A, and the fact that we pulled out not just from the city of Gaza, but also from the Israeli settlements inside Gaza doesn't change the status of the city of Gaza. Formally, it is territory A exactly like Nablus. In Nablus, we changed the reality because we made it clear to ourselves and to the world that we are moving in and out in order to prevent terrorism and to arrest suicide bombers and to prevent terrible suicide bomber attacks inside Israel. And in Gaza, not. So the difference is psychological or is not de facto difference, not de jure. If we shall operate in Gaza, this is a different thing. Secondly, I think that even if we shall declare Gaza, at least we shall agree that Gaza will become an interim Palestinian state, and I think we should, yes, that we should abolish the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, and we should agree that in Gaza it will be not anymore a Palestinian Authority, but a full state with limitations, many states. Having limitations and demilitarizing agreements with their neighbors, including Israel, by the way. We still have some agreements with Egypt on some demilitarization in the Negev, in the Israeli south, much wider demilitarization in the Egyptian territory. So there can be a state with limitations on such issues. But let's assume Gaza is a state now, declared by the UN, as I suggest. This doesn't mean that we cannot operate in Gaza. I think that we have a freedom of operation in any state around us that enabling terrorists to settle down near our borders and to attack our citizens or our soldiers. This goes without saying, so it makes no difference. In Lebanon is a sovereign state, but since they were shooting 4,000 rockets from Lebanon into Israel, I think nobody in the world, in the international community, said that it is illegal from Israel to go into Lebanon from air or from ground. Actually, there is no much difference. And to try to stop the shooting and to destroy the rockets and the terrorists behind the rockets. I didn't hear any complaint, although Lebanon is clearly a sovereign state, so I don't think that this will change the situation. If the Palestinian authority in Gaza or Palestinian government, in case that Gaza will become an interim Palestinian state recognized by the UN as an interim Palestinian state, if this state will enable terrorists to exercise people, to produce rockets, to shoot rockets into Israel, we will have the full right and duty to react. It makes no difference because the right of self-defense, Israel deserves the right of self-defense exactly like any other state on the face of earth. So I don't see here much difference. And in the past, during the 50s and 60s, and 70s, unfortunately, we are suffering from terrorism since the establishment of Israel. Before the 1967 war, before we occupied the territories, after, actually, there is no dramatic difference here. We did operations inside Egypt, before the peace treaty with Egypt, inside Jordan, inside Syria, and inside Lebanon, in order to try to prevent or to reduce terrorism against Israeli civilians. I would like to see a different situation in the Middle East, but as somebody mentioned already, the realities in the Middle East are becoming more difficult. Actually, we see two processes that are linked together. One is some decline in the American influence following their troubles in Iraq. And the other is the rising of the Iranian influence following this, also following the American problems in Iraq, but also under the assumption of many regional actors that sooner or later the world will allow Iran to become nuclear. So people already predict that Iran is becoming a kind of superpower. And those two processes are very negative to Israel and to the entire Middle East. And actually, to the entire world, because as Rafsanjani, more than the current president, the former Iranian president Rafsanjani, but also Ahmadinejad mentioned many times, said, you know, Europe, don't forget, you are in the vicinity, which means our missiles already reach south of Europe, Greece, south of Italy, East Europe, and in 2-3 years, our missiles will have the range of Paris and London, and this is clear, this is forthcoming. So it's very bad news, not just to us in the Middle East, but to the entire world. Unless the world will decide to change this reality. But until now, things look gloomy. You know, let me put this in a different phrase. We are living in some kind of clash of civilization. I think today it is clearer in Israel, in Europe, and in the United States between the Western world and fundamentalist Islamic forces. The problem is that in few years' time, this clash of civilization, which is bad enough as it is with terrorism, with global jihad, with terrible incitement against Israel, but against the West, against the infidels of the West in general. It's not just against Jews. It is focused against Jews and the Jewish state, but it is much more general. And you know, sometimes it's focused against the Jewish state in order to let other people to relax. Ah, we can sleep if the Iranians are building nuclear force, they will use it against Israel. It's not against us. But this is forthcoming. It's bad enough as it is. And if, and this is a big if it will have this clash of civilization, if it will have a nuclear dimension in it in a few years' time, it is going to be much worse. And as I mentioned, it is bad enough as it is. This conflict between fundamentalist Islam or Islamic forces, fundamentalist Islamic forces, not all Muslims are sharing this view or this approach, and the Western world. and I came here not to, you know, as politician, you always have to depict nice picture. Otherwise, the voters will prefer somebody else. You know, this is in any time that you meet the experts, you know, before election time, say you have to put some bright colors, yes, some pink colors into the picture. Otherwise, voters will prefer those who promise them a garden of roses and not those who promise them, like Churchill, yes, difficult times. But realities are difficult. And it might be very tough years ahead for Israel and for the entire world. I'm confident that we can prevail. We are, now I'm speaking from Israeli perspective, we are very strong. We are already correcting some of the mistakes and some of the mistakes also in our force building that were discovered last summer, and we can face it, but we should make no illusions. It is not going to be easy.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll stop there just to, in the interest of maintaining our discipline, our promise to you that we'll end on time. I'd like to thank you very much, Dr. Steinitz,
my pleasure,
member of Knesset Steinitz, for a very compelling presentation.
Thank you.